This is BBC Radio 4. Now here's Nicholas Parsons, sashaying up to the microphone to say...
Welcome to Just a Minute! Hello, my name is Nicholas Parsons, and as the minute waltz fades away, once more it is my pleasure to welcome our many listeners, not only in this country, but throughout the world, and also to welcome to the show four highly talented, skilled, humorous, and regular players of the game, who've come together once more to give of their best as they try and talk on the subject that I give them, and they try and do that without hesitation, repetition, or deviation. And those four people are sitting on my left, Paul Merton and Clement Freud, and sitting on my right, Ross Noble and Greg Proops. Would you please welcome all four of them? Claire Bartlett, and Claire's going to help me keep the score, and she'll blow a whistle when the 60 seconds are up. And this particular edition of Just a Minute is coming from the delightful Pleasance, which is on the fringe of the Edinburgh Festival in the year 2002, and we have a really hyped-up, excited, adrenaline festival fringe audience ready to give it their best as we start the show with Paul Merton. Paul, the subject... Gosh, no, why have they chosen this? I'm really nervous here. It's called The Chairman's Darkest Secret. I didn't know that was coming up any more than they did. But, Paul, will you talk on the subject starting now?
Nicholas, or as close friends know him, Susan, is the first transsexual to successfully host a panel show in this country. Looking at him now, it's hard to believe, but yes, he used to be a man. Is extraordinary. As he wafts through Edinburgh, the scented air behind him, the various wisps of pillow cases hanging around his ears, as he's come from the hotel where he is feted and starred in many productions in the bar. They know him there as Lily, because he can't use his own real name. As they see a stiletto heel print on the carpet, they look knowingly towards one another. They say, he has been here, who was once a she, and has now become a he again.
Well, in spite of all the libelous things you said, you certainly enjoyed it and you deserved your round of applause. But Clement, you challenged.
I hesitate.
Yeah. Oh.
Yes. Yeah, well, I don't know about that.
No, I don't know about that. I think there were other forces, but I don't think he hesitated.
Yes,
I thought
he said,
he. Oh, that's right.
Yes, I have a speech defect.
Clement, you have a correct challenge. You get a point for that, of course, and you take over the subject of the chairman's darkest secret, and there are 14 seconds available starting now.
Dark, darker, darkest. I think the chairman's darkest secret is the goat which he keeps in a house behind number 14 Ashfield Lane.
Paul Merton challenge.
That's no secret. We all know about that. I've washed it more times than I can remember. Poor devil.
Paul, we give you a bonus point for that. But Clement was interrupted, so he gets a point for that, and he keeps the subject of the chairman's darkest secret, and there are only 3 seconds left, thank goodness, starting now.
It is a nanny. There's nothing queer about the chairman.
In this game, whoever is speaking when the whistle goes gains an extra point. On this occasion, it was Clement Freud, so naturally he has got a lead at the end of that round. Paul Merton follows him, and then Ross Noble and Greg Proops. The next subject is, I'm sure it's been, I'd like you to take it, actually, Greg. It's been chosen specially for you, because we don't get many Americans on the show, and we're delighted to welcome one on again. And the subject is My Accent. Will you tell us something about my accent, starting now?
My accent is an impenetrable, indecipherable, incalculable, unplaceable accent. I come from California, but originally I'm from nasal land. My mother is from Mississippi, so she tends to speak with a long, drawn-out drawl and say things like, it scared the peduncle out of me. This is a colloquialism that I've never understood, no matter how many times my mother said it in her own... Yes,
and Ross Noble challenged.
Was a repetition of mother.
Yes, you repeated your mother too often.
Whoa, you talking about my mother, Nicholas? little early for that.
You brought her into it, and you repeated it, I'm afraid. You can't do that within the rules of just a minute. So, Ross, good to hear from you. You have a correct challenge, a point, of course. 32 seconds. And now you tell us something about your accent. My accent, starting now.
Well, for those of you listening on the World Service that don't know England, my accent is the poshest in all of the land. That's right. This is what people who are really at the top of their profession sound like. The lords and ladies swanning around the garden parties. Why, I, Your Majesty, will be heard ringing across the place. I'd very much like to enjoy one of your champion Ferrero Rocher. You may even hear the beautiful refrain of, "Ooh, Ambassador, with these pork pies."
Well, Ross, they certainly enjoyed that. The image you created was wonderful. And you were speaking as the whistle went. You gained an extra point for that. You're in second place behind Clement Freud as we move into the next round. Which, Ross, it's actually your turn to begin. And, this is interesting. It says, how to deal with a bully. I don't know whether you get many of those in your audience up here at the Fringe, but tell us how you deal with them on that subject, starting now.
I was a big fan of the popular game show Bullseye when it was on in the 80s, and their little character that would appear on the said show was, in fact, Bully, the Bully.
Greg, challenge.
Repetition. I believe Ross said the word show twice.
He did say the word show twice. Well, listen, Greg.
You're good.
Yeah. So you've got your first point, Greg, and you've got a subject. You've got 51 seconds. You tell us something about how to deal with a bully.
Being as I was 4'11" until the age of 16, I had experience with bullies in my life. Wearing spectacles and having a smart mouth led me into many situations where I was dangled over toilets and hung over lines. Being butt-dragged across the lawn was a distinct American pleasure that bullies entertain younger, smaller children with in the United States of America. Growing up, I was able to gather... Yes.
Yes. Paul, you tell me.
There was a bit of hesitation.
There was a bit of hesitation. You erred there.
Oh, that was dramatic emphasis.
It was dramatic.
No one knew what was coming next, and I wanted to increase the suspense.
But unfortunately, you can't do that in just a minute because those are the rules. And you did. Actually, I didn't think it was much suspense, actually, but...
Why don't we trade places and I'll sit there?
When I came on your radio show recently, you were rude enough to me.
You're right. You're right. Fair play.
No, it was just fun. My mobile went off in the middle of his show, actually. The,
Somebody phoned you?
Yeah.
He has himself on redial.
Paul, you have a correct challenge, and you have 23 seconds available to tell us something about how to deal with a bully, starting now.
Shoot them is a good way. Another way is perhaps us three ways.
Clement Freud, challenge.
There was two ways.
And you've got the subject of how to deal with a bully, and 19 seconds, starting now.
You get your hockey stick and approach another player of the same game who has a similar implement in his hand.
Paul, challenge.
Sorry, was I challenged for this?
Clement was interrupted. He gets a point for that. He keeps the subject, how to deal with a bully, Clement, and there are 12 seconds starting now.
You lie down and pretend you're dead. They tend to go away and bully someone else, which is far preferable to being accosted or assailed by larger, heavier, stronger people.
Clement Freud was then speaking as the whistle went, gained the extra point, and he's increased his lead at the end of that round. And he also begins the next round. So I don't know, somebody wrote to me about this, but it's not an advantage always to begin, because you've got to keep going for 60 seconds. Unless you're challenged, and it's an incorrect challenge, you're less likely to make points when you start than when you don't start with the subject.
That's fascinating. Okay.
Yes, well, I didn't want to answer the letter, so I've done it over the air. Right. Yeah. Clement, the subject now is fudge. Will you tell us something about fudge in this game, starting now?
As if you are the first speaker, you don't get any points unless you fudge it. I thought I would start fudging this particular subject and talk about condensed milk, which is a hugely important...
Paul challenged.
Well, it's a sudden death, really.
It's the first... If you begin a subject, you don't get a lot of points.
Is that right? So he was illustrating that, but in the process he lost the subject because it was a correct challenge of hesitation, and you have 43 seconds to tell us something about fudge, Paul, starting now.
Politicians are often accused of fudging the issue, aren't they? You say to one of them, what time is it? And they say, well, I suppose...
Clement, challenge.
You see, now you get a point.
If it's
repetition
a correct...
of say.
That's right, he did say twice. So, Clement, you've got a point. You're illustrating my point that I made at the beginning. And fudge is still is back with you. 37 seconds, starting now.
Fruit, flavours, substances.
Paul Charles.
That doesn't make any sense. Fruit, flavours? What does that mean?
I think he was going to go on.
Just wait. Just wait.
Oh, wait. How long should we wait for? Over a minute?
No, to be fair, he hadn't really got going. I mean...
Is it all right if Greg and I just go for a sandwich? Yeah.
All this talk about fudge has got us snuggled.
Yeah, yeah. Right. So, he didn't really get going. Clement, another point. 34 seconds starting now.
A sugar thermometer is pretty important and contains milk.
Ross, challenge.
Sorry, I thought he was hesitating there, just at the idea of a sugar thermometer. Sort of bamboozled himself, like...
Sugar thermometer.
Wouldn't it melt?
What's that?
Wouldn't it melt?
I don't know. There was a slight hesitation, Ross. So I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt and say you have the subject of fudge and 30 seconds starting now.
Fudge, those tiny little lovely sticky bricks. Often I buy them and build little houses out of them and lick the tops of them in a... I'll just pause me. I mean, I clearly don't.
So, Paul, you challenge.
It was a desperate cry for help.
Right. And you answered it. Hesitation, 19 seconds. Fudge with you, Paul, starting now.
If you want to make really good fudge, the first and perhaps the most important ingredient is condensed milk. What you have...
Ross, challenge.
What about the sugar thermometer?
No. Overrated.
It's not an ingredient. It's more of a utensil, isn't it?
It's not one of those sweets that takes your temperature as you eat it. It's not one
of those. So is there a sweet that takes your
temperature? There is, yes.
Really?
What's that one?
Yes, what is that?
Well, it's not on the subject. So.
Well, since we have a minute...
No. Paul, you have 12 seconds and another point. Fudge is still with you, starting now.
When I was 7 years old, undoubtedly my favourite food stuff was fudge. I couldn't wait. Every Friday when I came home from school, my mother would lay it on the table and she'd say, "Get stuck in, son. That's the best fudge you'll ever eat."
Paul Merton, speaking as a whistle away and gain an extra point, and he's moved forward. He's 1 point behind our leader, Clement Freud, and Ross Noble and Greg Proulx, so trailing in that order. And, Greg, it's your turn to begin. Yes. The Scottish diet. That is the subject. 60 seconds starting now.
Chips.
And Paul, you challenge.
Hesitation.
Yes,
I was going somewhere with that.
Yeah. You went for your laugh, you got it, and retired. Right. Paul got in first, and there are 58 seconds on the Scottish diet, Paul, starting now.
Well, there are more incidents of heart disease in Scotland than anywhere else in Western Europe, which is a bit of a shame, really. I think it's got something to do with the fact that if it's not deep fried, it can't be food. There is an element, though, which is say this is changing, and if you walk around the streets of Edinburgh, you can see gay little cafes springing up that offer honest, decent people a good time food-wise. That's another strange way of saying something to eat. I don't know why I said it like that, but I did, and I can't go back on it, because that would be repetition.
Clement Freud, challenge.
He could have gone back on it.
Well, he could have done, but he didn't. No, it's just a devious thought. He wasn't deviating within the rules of just a minute.
He was deviating from the rules of just a minute.
No, he has the benefit of the diet, definitely. And 30 seconds, tell us more about the Scottish diet, Paul, starting now.
Ah, but fresh fish in the morning, kippers lying on your plate, sometimes if they're cooked very, very slowly.
Yes.
I thought that could have been repetition.
Oh, you're so quick, Clement. I don't know how to keep up with you. It was repetition of Berry, and you have 23 seconds. Tell us something about the Scottish diet starting now.
I think we've heard so much about the Scottish diet that I would tell you my favourite chat-up line. Is when somebody says...
He hesitated and deviated at exactly the same time.
He did, but which
but we'll give him the benefit of the doubt.
Do we each get to chair our own individual game?
You can demand points, as Clemens just done. It was very funny, but he did hesitate, and you've got the subject, Ross, and a point, of course, of the Scottish diet starting now.
The Scottish people really do love to eat bits of organ straight from the animal itself. The ultimate dish here in this fine tartan land would be licking a pig's face, not even bothering...
Ross Noble's moved forward. He's still in third place, just ahead of Greg Proust. And Paul Merton and Clement Freud are now equal in the lead. Ross, it's your turn to begin. Something which I think is a subject you probably know a great deal about up here at the Fringe. A full house. You've experienced that nearly every night, I'm sure. Talk on the subject starting now.
I very much have a full house because I have an inability to walk past any shop without buying everything in there. My particular place of residence is filled with absolute junk. I have angle grinders, flip charts. I also own many different welding pieces of equipment, large steel chickens, which I've placed hats upon that I got in Mallorca. There was a large Mexican donkey, which was...
Greg, you challenge.
I think it was a large chicken and a large donkey.
Oh, you're right.
He did, that's right. It was large. Well, listen. Ooh.
I should have said larger, shouldn't I?
Yeah, even larger. Yeah, even larger.
Speaking,
yes.
The donkey is bigger than the chicken.
Right.
I'm a fool to myself, really.
More of a philosophical conundrum, I would think.
Yeah.
If Greg, I could say it.
Greg, you had a correct challenge.
Yes, fantastic. Right.
I know it is. Yes, and you have the subject. And a point. A full house is with you starting now.
A full house is, of course, what every performer who comes to the Fringe wants, expects, needs, and enjoys. However, often you'll find that when you go out in front of the audience, there's two people there, and one of them's making a phone call. At that point, you realize that you mustn't dwell on the fact that you haven't a full house, but must give it your all. You've got to get out there and tell your jokes one after the next. Or if you're me, tell your jokes from years...
Clement challenge.
Two jokes.
There are too many jokes, I'm afraid.
Oh, I'm sorry. Am I crowding the show with humor?
I'll give you a bonus for that last one. You've got a round of applause.
Thank you, since the monologue had nothing.
Yes. Put your equal Ross in third place. But Clement gets a point for a correct challenge, and he has 8 seconds, a full house starting now.
When I have a full house, I used to tell them my favourite chat-up line, which is somebody saying to me, will you come upstairs and make love to me? And I would say I can no longer do both.
So give Clement the point for speaking when the whistle went, and that bonus point which he's been fighting for all along. And he's increased his lead at the end of the round. And the next subject, Paul, is for you to start, and it is Highland Games. Tell us something about that very Scottish subject in this game, starting now.
There are many wonderful traditional games played in the Highlands, for example, tossing the bullock, hunting the neeps and tatties. These are various pastimes that have been handed down from father to son over generations. And it's a marvellous sight to see these brawny men standing...
Ross, challenge.
Brawny?
Yeah.
Brawny,
yes.
Is that a lot? Mm. Oh, yeah, yes. I was thinking of... Sorry.
Have you gone, Ross?
I thought it was like men with brawn and scrawny, and he'd combined the two.
I don't know where we go from there. I'm lost. Paul, an incorrect challenge. Another point. 44 seconds. Tell us more about Highland Games starting now.
Grouse hunting could be classed as a Highland game as well, I suppose.
Clement, challenge.
No, it couldn't.
Yes, it could. It might be wrong, but it could be classed. You can class an egg as a chicken, but you might be wrong, but you can class it.
That is an argument, but if we actually had that argument all the time in just a minute, we'd never get anywhere.
We'd never get anywhere, Nicholas.
No, that's right. And they do grouse shoot in places outside of Scotland, so I think we have to give Clement the benefit of the doubt, which he loves to... and say, Clement, you have 41 seconds. Tell us something about Highland Games starting now.
I received a letter the other day from the Ross and Cromarty Caber Tossing Association saying that in view of my advanced age, I should take part in the hop, step and jump for over 75s. I said pole vault is the sport for me. And ever since, I have been trying this extraordinary athletic pursuit of running down a runway, a causeway. I said run and cause and way.
I know, but they enjoy
They're
what
they're hyphenated. Anyway,
words, Paul, you challenged.
Yes, he said run and way and cause twice.
They're hyphenated words. The only repetition was the hyphen.
Actually, well, I thought they were. Well, I didn't think that it was a hyphen. I don't think people put the hyphen in nowadays. So,
not anymore. Since we joined Europe.
No.
But I get challenged because I say grouse hunting is an island game, and you say you give him the benefit. Then he starts talking about pole vaulting.
I know. But he did pause.
Did he pause?
Yes. And I think you shall have the benefit of the doubt on this.
There, see, it all works out in the end, doesn't it?
It all works out evenly in the end. I have to try and be fair. Highland Games, 12 seconds, Paul, starting now.
Undoubtedly, the highlight of any Highland game is when all the competitors stand in the middle of the circle, they look at each other, and they speak these words. They say...
What timing, eh? So, Paul, you've got an extra point again, and you move forward. You're two ahead of Clement Freud. And what do they say? Were you going to say something, or were you just timing it for dramatic effect?
I was timing it for dramatic effect,
well
Nicholas.
Done, well.
I could see the whistle out the corner of me eye.
So you see the way they play the game, listeners. I have to point these things out to her. If Claire puts the whistle up a little early, they slow down. If she puts it up late, anyway, it doesn't really matter. Greg, it's your turn to begin. And after that, the subject is small talk.
Interesting.
Interesting. Would you tell us something about that subject of small talk in this game, starting now?
People always come up to me and mention different various topics. For instance, lately I've heard that Elvis Presley was Scottish. His original name was Elvis Prescott, and...
Paul Challenge.
A repetition of Elvis.
Of Elvis.
Hey, man, I'm talking about the king. I mean, I don't get to repeat that?
No. Right, Paul, a correct challenge. And 49 seconds. Small talk starting now.
Small talk is the sort of thing that I'm very bad at. I can't stick small talk. I never know what to say if you're going to say so. As I've demonstrated.
Clement, yes. Right, small talk's with you, Clement. And there are 42 seconds starting now.
Does your mother take in washing? Has she sold her mangle? What's become of the old piano your sister used to strangle? Has your father plenty of work? Does he still get booze too? Tell me all the particulars and stay as long as you used to. Was a Victorian music hall song, which I think epitomized small talk. But what Paul was saying made a lot of
Paul, you challenge.
Hesitation, sadly.
Yeah, we interpret as hesitation. Yes. Yeah. So, Paul, you have the subject back.
I thought that was his name.
All right. you have eight. You have 18 seconds on small talk starting now.
What a lot of weather we've been having lately, I suppose, is the ultimate of small talk when you meet a stranger somewhere and you're thinking, how can we pass the time? Perhaps there is something in common. What could it be? I know we'll talk about what we have above us in the...
Clement Challenge.
4 watts.
One, yes. The
one. 4 watts.
What?
Enough for a... almost enough for a small light bulb. Am I being challenged on a small word like what?
Well, if you say... Often they let it go, you only repeat it once.
Did they?
But you did repeat it more than once.
Did I?
Yes. And Clement not only has a subject, but he has any benefit that's going. And 2 seconds available, Clement. Small talk starting now.
A new laundrette is opening.
I have to tell you we're moving... Oh, let me give you the score at the end of that round, which is that Paul is just 1 point ahead of Clement Freud and the other two are trailing them a little. Greg Proops and Ross Noble equal. And we're moving into the final round. And, Ross, it's your turn to begin. and the subject is slogans. Tell us something about slogans in just a minute, starting now.
One of the most famous slogans ever would be "Make Love, Not War," which led to quite a lot of amorous servicemen going into battle and trying it on with the enemy. They'd come out wearing fancy clothing, maybe stockings and suspenders. "Hey, how's it going, you crazy kids?" they'd say as they started to gently writhe around in the trenches, you know, possibly performing some sort of novel dance or even some sort of erotic movement. That
would be. Paul Challenge.
Sadly, repetition of some sort.
Yeah, there was some sort there, I'm afraid.
Oh, yeah, fair enough.
Yes,
yeah,
fair enough. Yes. So you went for, oh, my goodness me, yes, you went for 22 seconds.
Blimey.
Yes. Sorry, I'm
not
wrong.
Hugely 40, impressive,
42.
Is it?
Sorry.
Oh, 42 seconds.
Yeah,
well,
I had
that's
to subtract.
Impressive.
I had to subtract.
Oh, hang on a second.
Yes. No,
22
went.
Seconds.
No, you went for 32 seconds.
Do I hear 12?
Yes.
Can we advance on that?
I don't mind telling you, I'm now frightened and confused.
But. So Greg is now comforting Ross, but Paul, you had a correct challenge, and you have 28 seconds for slogans starting now.
A lot of slogans that we're familiar with these days spring from the advertising industry. "Go to work on an egg" was a very popular slogan in the 1960s, created by that woman novelist Faye Weldon when she was working as a copywriter. Not perhaps an interesting fact, but nevertheless a true one. The slogan that I live my life by is this: if you can be kind, honest, sincere, and you can fake all those elements, you have a career in show business.
Right. What a note on which to finish. Just a minute. So we finished the show. As I said, there was to be the last round, so let me give you the final situation. Always emphasising, as I like to, that it's the contribution they make and not the points they win. Which I'm sure you agree, but they are keen to get their points. So let me tell you that Greg Proust and Ross Noble were equal in third place. In second place was Clement Freud, and he was 3 points behind Paul Merton. So we say, Paul, you are the winner this week. Paul Merton. So, if any remains for me to say a special thank you to these four delightful, clever and humorous players of the game, Paul Merton, Ross Noble, Greg Proops and Clement Freud. Also thank Claire Bartlett, who's helped me with the score and blown her whistle so elegantly when the 60 seconds was up. And we thank also our producer, director, Claire Jones, who does such a marvellous job. And we're indebted to Ian Messiter, who created this game. And we are thankful to this lovely audience here at the Fringe, at the Pleasance, during the festival of 2002, who have been so warm and generous in their reaction. From them, from me, Nicholas Parson and our team, goodbye till the next time we play. Just a minute.
And you can tune in the same time next week for the last programme in the series, when Nicholas Parsons is joined by Paul Merton, Ross Noble, Clement Freud and Sean Locke.